Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And also, we're going to be talking about one older book that was suggested on iTunes for us at the end of the podcast. That is Catwoman, The Cat File. So we'll be getting that later. If you'd like to request a book, you can do that on iTunes as well. Just leave us a rating and a comment. Could be an old graphic novel, trade collection, comic book maybe that's new that we just haven't gotten to, whatever it is. All good. We love talking about
it. It could be anything. It could be something we want to read, like Pete wants to shout out, like, some Punisher thing.
Eastman and Laird Siege Ninja Turtles, you know? Yeah. I mean, that
Pete,
would be fun.
Don't request it right here. If you could just go to the iTunes comments.
Yeah.
Leave us a 5-star rating would be great.
Yeah, and then throw out one of your burner accounts.
Be like,
don't talk
what's
shit
up,
about
everybody?
Us.
It's me, Pete LePage. I'm one of the hosts of the show.
It's me, Pert LePurge. I'm just a regular fan of the show, just here to recommend Punisher number 6000.
So far,
where
I've
he
left,
guns it up.
I've left 50 comments under different names, so it's fair game, wow. Pete. Go for it. Let's kick it off with some new books, though. The Jurassic League, number one from DC Comics, written by Juan Gedion.
Let's keep it fun.
Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Juan Gedion. Now, Pete, you're a huge Daniel Warren Johnson fan. This is a new book that he's not doing the art on, but it does have dinosaur versions of the Justice League. So it's like,
I don't know how
you feeling about this.
Well, he's a co-writer, you know, as someone who's a co-host, I understand. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's nice to work on a collaboration. You know, you still get your voice out there, but it's not all you. So, I think this is just a ton of fun. The art's fantastic. And it's cool. It is just like, my favorite was the Wonder Don. Just kind of seeing all the different ones. It's easy to get the premise. It's fun to follow. And the art is just really great. And it brings you right back to the golden, Jurassic era, if you will.
Wow. But you said it's easy to get the concept. So slow down for me here.
Yep.
So there's a bunch of dinosaurs here.
Here we go. Here's the premise. Here's the premise, okay?
Oh, boy. I can't believe I missed this.
The Justice League.
Superman and his friends.
Yeah.
His amazing friends.
Dinosaurs. So it's dinosaurs survived, but instead of evolving into humans, we evolved into these kind of like dinosaur that are smaller, but kind of more, you know, buff and actiony a little bit. So, yeah.
Like the TV show Dinosaurs, but for superheroes. I got you.
Not the mama.
No.
I got to tell you, reading this book, my main reaction was, does it make sense that these dinosaurs are wearing clothes and these other dinosaurs aren't wearing clothes? And then I decided it didn't matter, and I just enjoyed the book.
Don't overthink this.
And that's exactly the point. Christ. Like, it's the kind of book that you just ride it. And I think the team here is doing a great job of just keeping it fun and letting it just be like, no, this is what we're doing. They're just dinosaurs, and they're wearing spandex. I don't know how they found it. They found a spandex mine of some sort and put it on, and they're off to the races.
Well, just real quick, I wanted to say about Juan Gedion's art that it's actually very fondly reminiscent of Daniel Warren Johnson's art. Like,
exactly.
I think there's a similar sense to it. So even though he wasn't doing the art, I still thought it felt right at
it's
home.
In
go
his
ahead.
Neighborhood. Yeah,
exactly,
for sure.
Exactly.
Maybe they're friends.
And that's the thing.
Probably not. They're probably enemies.
Maybe one of us is a dinosaur. We don't know. That's how they get in the head of the dinosaurs. It's tiny brains. They're birds. You know, dinosaurs are birds now. Did you know?
You know what? I bet they went into the DC office and they had like all these pitches. They pitched like a Detective Chip book, right? They pitched like Justice League Dark, a Green Lantern book, a bunch of other things. And they're like, "Do you have anything from your experience?" And in the back of their like tiny little dinosaur brains, they're like, "Lizard, this is what I didn't want to do. Everybody's always talking about how I'm a dinosaur who wears clothes." It's like, sure, fine, I'll pitch from my experience, and that's how they got this book.
Well, two things on what you just said, Alex. I like that you started with they have a detective chimp pitch as your A story to go
a
into.
A
like,
story.
Detective chimp.
You got to start big. You got to start big.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone's. This is the sixth Detective Chimp pitch we got today. Second, no way they went in there with just saying stuff. They brought all the Justice League dressed up. They dressed up birds to look like the Justice League and said, "You got to de-evolve these birds." And then you got, you know what you got? Dinosaurs. And that's why when you see people pitching, they always walk in with six bird cages with the pitches on a costume on a bird.
That's where the phrase canary in the pitch mine comes from. Canary dies during the pitch. You're like, oh, we're not picking
Justin,
that
I don't
pitch.
Know what happened, but I'm sorry your brain broke on this.
I do know what happened, but that's fine. Another great thing about pitching DC with birds is you can go right into the children's magic show that you have later in the afternoon and make those birds disappear!
Why don't we move on and talk about the first of several free Comic Book Day books. Now, you probably all know this if you're listening out there, but this past Saturday was free Comic Book Day. You could go into your comic book shop, pick up a book. If you did go in and you didn't also buy a book, I'd recommend going back to that shop and buying a book because they actually need to pay for these free comic books. So that's a hot little tip for you. But that said, we are going to talk about some of them because they still use this as an opportunity to release some bigger titles and tease some bigger events coming down the road. Starting with Free Comic Book Day, Judgment Day, number one from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, Danny Lohr, and Jerry Dugan, art by Dustin Weaver, Karen S. Darbo, and Matteo Lali. This is kicking off Avengers versus X-Men versus Eternals, the big event coming later this summer in the Marvel Universe. This is through the lens of the Eternals book. It is narrated by the big computer that has been narrating the Eternals book. I'll tell you what, I'm somewhat ambivalent about this event, or at least I was going into it. But reading this book, Kieran Gillen's tone on Eternals in particular is so good and so much fun that I felt like, okay, if this is what this event is going to be, I'm good. I'll read it because it's going to be a good time. What'd you guys think though?
I think the same thing. And I think what they've done a good job with here is they are putting it, they're really looking at the pieces on the board and they're using the elements correctly. They're like, mutants are they deviating too hard, because that comes into Eternals territory, and the Avengers are just like, we're always checking on stuff, so they're always in the mix, so that it brings everybody together in a natural way. And they even say in the book, like, the Avengers and the X-Men have fought before, but never like this.
Oh,
it got me. Oh, feels man. Different
Pete? I felt like that that giant in the book where my head exploded with the verses and the verses and the verses. But I love all this action, so man, sign me up.
There you go. So what are all the villains going to do during this event?
Watch everything burn. Speaking of which, why don't we move on to Archie Meets Riverdale, number one from Archie Comics, written by what?
I just wanted to say the art's really bananas.
It was bananas good.
Archie Meets Riverdale, number one from Archie Comics, written by Daniel Kibblesmith, art by Pat and Tim Kennedy. You could probably figure out what happens here from the title. But due to a mix-up by Dilton Doily from the regular Archie Comics.
That guy. When he mixes up, it's a problem. Because you know what? He's too smart.
People from the Archie Comics universe and the Riverdale universe start switching places, so we get to see a mashup of these two universes. We get to see hot Archie meet regular Archie, among other things.
And of course, he takes his shirt off. I mean,
it's a good time. What a good time reading a comic book.
It's like when it's a drawing meeting a doodle.
I tell you what I did like. A little Bughead action.
You're too excited, Pete. You're like a little bad. You love living. Give me some more of that.
I did appreciate that. One thing Daniel did with this book, and I'll mention he's a friend of the show. We've had him on a couple of times. Great stuff. Very funny. Clearly knows what's going on in these two universes. I appreciated the fact that even though Jughead popped into the Riverdale universe, they kept him asexual. Like, that is what he is in regular Archie comics. So they didn't force a romance between Pointy Nose, Jughead, and Betty or anything like that. So they kept that stuff separate. I think that was nice. There's a bunch of fun surprises throughout the book. The art is very fun. The mashups of art.
Reggie's great.
Reggie's great. Good jokes throughout. Like, there's some good jokes about Riverdale, some good jokes about Archie comics.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting when you get into it, and that's what this title delivered.
And, you know, it's not easy to pull something like this off. It's, like, super meta. It's like a, you know, a mashup between just two different media forms of these characters. So you got to really tread the line smartly, and Daniel does it. And the artist, I thought, did a great job of letting the worlds collide and stick out against each other, but not like it wasn't ever confusing about what was happening. So just a great, fun book to read.
And something that I hope the show starts doing more is bringing Sabrina in. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
She is. Later on in the season, she's coming back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do it more.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, Free Comic Book Day, Dark Crisis number 0 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson and Dennis Culver, art by Jim Cheung, Chris Burnham, and Rafa Sandoval. Again, this is a kickoff of DC's big event, this time as Pariah, being controlled by the Great Darkness, or being an avatar of the Great Darkness, is controlling all of the other big villains of the DC universe. The Justice League is dead. A new Justice League has risen in their place, and it's all about to go down in the pages of Dark Crisis. Pete, it looks like you have a question.
Yeah, I don't have a question. It's just something that I wanted to say, and that is fine. You know what? You know, I say a lot of things about zero issues, but on Free Comic Book Day, if you want to do a zero issue, fine.
Wow.
I'll let you.
Wow.
That's great. It works
this
out
like
really well.
This is like your Rum Springer, but for this zero issues.
Yeah, this, yeah. You know what? Good for you. You did this well. I feel like this is a perfect example of a use of a zero issue that works. And frankly, I was impressed with it.
Justin, really? What about you? What did you think of this one?
Yeah, I mean, I like this. I like Clayface in here as a villain. I think this book does a good job of really showing the danger of a world without the Justice League in it. And obviously, we've done crises before. We've done events like this before, and a world without a Justice League we've done before. But this feels like the elements are there to form this new Justice League, and it feels like we, the reader, can see it before even the book is showing it to us in a good way.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Oh, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, yeah, I also felt very seen where Clayface couldn't hold it together. Mm-hmm. Little kid broke him at his day job. And, you know, sometimes you got to just kind of turn around and yell at somebody's kid, you know, because the kid's acting out of line. And I feel like that was fair and fun and a great use of Clayface. I think it's, you know, it's a good time for sure.
Yeah, this to me feels like another one of those DC events that's trying to explain away the bananas continuity that's gone on for decades at this point. And your mileage may vary, but Joshua Williamson, I think, is doing a solid job of figuring all that out and then pushing this forward. So we'll see how it executes in the title itself. I hope it lives up to the Crisis name, but so far it's off to a nice, solid start.
One other thing I want to say.
Wow, so many things.
Wow, look at this.
All right, well, I'll go and then you go. But I did want to say also, though, not to be all negative about kids, the kids in this comic, though, that saved the day really stepped up. I really thought that was a really kind of beautiful metaphor for what the comic was going for. But also the art was really, really good.
Yeah, I was going to the way on sort of the middle of the issue, I think it was like the second sort of section, the history of the DC multiverse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Bit when the sort of the dark hand, light hand metaphor. Mm-hmm. And we see the fingers with all the different crisis villains, super villains throughout here. I thought that was one of the best visual explainers of the DC universe and how the villains are all working from one single source. Saying it, showing us without saying it, I thought this was just really great.
And DC loves their giant hands in space, worked really well as well.
Yeah.
I was only surprised that that hand didn't have 52 fingers and then everything would come together.
Oh, that's so smart. You know what? We should bring that in there with 52 birds. This is a good idea. We'll dress up the birds as fingers.
Justin has lost.
This is good. This is
Justin has lost his mind.
We're going to pitch this. I got a line on 51 birds.
Okay, Dan DiDio, who I think is still in charge. No. 52 birds with 52 fingers. What do you think, Detective Chip? Let's go.
That's good. It's a Detective Chimp series. Yeah. He's got 52 chimp fingers. I just need to catch one pigeon tomorrow, and we're set the appointment, okay?
All right, great.
Next up, another big event kicking off, Hulk versus Thor, Banner of War Alpha from Marvel, written by Donny Cates, art by Martin Cocoglio. This is bringing together the stuff that Donny has been writing both in Hulk and Thor. Hulk is in a spaceship in his own body, and Thor is talking to his dad, who is in his habber. So a lot of weird stuff that needs to be set up here. But I'll tell you what, Donny does it, has a lot of fun, brings you right in. If you've been reading
Donny
one
does
title,
it. Hey, Donny does it again.
Donny
does it.
Let me pitch you this. Here's my pitch. Donny does it again. What are we thinking?
I mean, Donny does it. There's a great moment here where the Mjolnir is on Hulk, and he's like, "You can't get up." They're on the bridge of the starship, the meat ship Hulk, and he's like, "You can't get up. The hammer's on you." He's like, "I've got it. Let's show me every hit Thor's ever gotten on me." And he gets so mad that he sits up through his torso. The hammer falls through. And he's like, "Let's go."
Well, in defense, the hammer doesn't move. He lifts, you know, kind of through the
hammer.
That's
what I'm saying. He lifts. He doesn't lift the hammer. He lifts the meat.
Yeah, it's super gross. But also the moment
is that how you refer to your body, is the meat?
Yeah, exactly. When I'm doing a push-up, I'm like, time to lift the meat.
Oh, man.
God, I got to go in and jump in the shower and clean the meat.
Oh, my God.
That means something different than you think it means. Oh, go ahead. Boy.
This title is kind of insane with this kind of battle, because we kind of have both the characters a little bit out of their gourd. So the moments where they're both kind of looking at each other being like, "Who are you talking to?" was nice. But the fight was insane. The fact that he did a push up kind of like, and left half of his body there was insane. But I'm excited to see what's going to happen and how this moves forward. This was amazing action, fantastic art, a crazy idea. I'm all for it.
What would you think about to inspire yourself to push a hammer through your back?
It would just be you in danger, buddy.
That's so nice.
That is the opposite of what I thought you were going to say.
Exactly. Pete, the meat's in trouble.
Next up, 8 Billion Genies, number one from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule, art by Ryan Brown. This is reteaming the team from Curse Words on a new title. Yeah. As you could probably figure out from the title, the idea is that every single person on Earth gets a genie with one wish.
You get a genie.
All at the same time, and not to spoil it too much, turns out very poorly almost immediately, as we focus on one bar and a couple of characters in this bar who get genies, as well as in the next issue, we're going to blast out and see what happened to the rest of the world. Big concept here, big complicated concept. How do you think it played out in the first issue?
I loved it. I thought it was great. This Curse Words was a book that felt like it was sort of moving through short arcs, and they were sort of figuring out as they went. And I don't mean that as a slam. I just think it felt like it was like a fun, almost sketch pad of a book where they're like, let's see what we can push these characters through over the course of several years of making it. This one feels like, oh, we've got a plan here from the jump, and it's about that recklessness of being a human. And we've got our main character, one of the main characters, the bar owner, who very quickly is like, makes his wish, and it's a very smart wish, and I think it sets up just a great dynamic and like a headquarters for
there's a little there's a little too much to that bartender. I feel like there's going to be more than meets the eye with that bartender.
Well, you know what? He looks a little bit like your classic genie. Shavehead goatee.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, he's got genie looks, genie vibes.
Genie vibes.
Retired genie. I'm getting too old for this shit.
Yeah, but you got to be upset, though, that you you make a wish, and then the fact that the bartender did a super wish, and you got gypped on yours, you got to be upset. I mean, that's got to
be tough. So here's the big question. If you got a genie right now, what would be your one wish? Justin?
I'd hold on to that genie wish for a while.
See, yeah, here's the thing. You don't rush into that. You get one wish, you lay out. Hold up, hold up. Let's see how things, you know. But yeah, the it was funny to kind of see the person with the more money than they know what to do with. You know, that was an interesting one there. I liked the people who wanted a giant Voltron to fly around in. I mean, that's just smarts, you know?
Yeah. That's
what are you not going to do with that?
Yeah, just exactly.
Giant Voltron? Is that what you'd go for?
Yeah.
Would you have to get four friends to do it with?
No, you don't need a, you know, I mean, you know, if you.
Oh, that's a great point. I would wish for four friends.
Wow. But no Voltron? Seems weird.
just the very idea of having four friends seems inconceivable to me.
Well, let me be honest, Alex. It's a lot to juggle. I don't know if you want to. If you don't have Voltron to keep you busy, what are you guys going to do? Play cards? It's about an odd number.
I can't even imagine.
It's an even.
I haven't thought that far in advance, to be honest.
No, but with him, it's five.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's wild.
So, you know, five people is a hard. Here's my prediction for this book. The last wish will get rid of all the wishes.
Oh, that's why. Mm-hmm. That's why you were like, oh, wait for it. You got to wait for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This book is great. I'm very excited to follow it. This team is great. Ryan Brown's art is great. Charles Soule always plans out very intricately with this stuff. So this should be a lot of fun. Why don't we move on and talk about Wonder Woman 787 from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad and Jordi Belair. Art by Emanuela Lupacino and Paulina Ganachau. This is picking up after the end of Trial of the Amazons, as well as yet another story of young Wonder Woman. Now, coming out of this event that I think we were mixed positive about, I'd say, at the end of the day, how are you feeling about Wonder Woman at this point?
Well, I think this is a great issue because we kind of we get to see Dr. Psycho's kind of like full plan here. So now we know a little bit more about what's happening, which is great. Also, you know, we kind of you see a classic example of why you don't do a villain monologue, because if the superhero can hear you, it really gives everything away. So classic kind of rookie mistake here, which was fun. But also, like, Wonder Woman was just kind of like, hey, you know what? I hope you don't kill yourself. I'm out of here. Like, that was a kind of crazy moment. It's like, whoa, all right. I'm enjoying Wonder Woman. I really like the art and the storytelling and kind of putting Wonder Woman in different situations here than we normally see. So cool stuff.
Sorry, I was confused here. How come she's not a dinosaur?
That's just really in one book. That doesn't mean all the.
This is my problem with comics. They're impossible to read. I mean, what's even going on with them? You know?
My God.
What's happening?
I do like this book a lot. I feel this issue a lot. Especially stuff at the back half where you can tell Wonder Woman's got some issues with her ex and her sort of, I don't know, flirtation, our roommates. And that's going to be trouble down the road.
I agree with you. I really like when they get past the Trial of the Amazon stuff, which is solid, mind you. But I think this setup with Dr. Psycho in particular, putting him forward as like a men's right activist type person is so smart.
Love that.
What a great place to put him. What so pointed and present to
Guy's
the current
day. Guy's a piece
day.
Of garbage.
He is. And putting him in that way is great. So really good choice there. And as always, the backup is really good as well. Let's move on and talk about Free Comic Book Day Spider-Man Venom number one for Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, Al Ewing, and Ram V. Art by John Romita Jr. and Stefano Raphael. Unlike the other ones, this is teeing up something I think a little further down the road. This is setting up the big Spider-Man event that is coming our way, I think, in the fall, but I might be wrong about that. As well as what is coming up in the Venom title. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, first off, bananas art. I mean, come on. Remeter Jr. That's just kind of classic stuff. And, you know, we've all felt like taking it to a mailbox every once in a while. So, yeah, it was nice to kind of like see Spider-Man work out some of the aggression on that mailbox. You know, who was super mean to that nice old man?
Well, I'll tell you what, I just want to throw this out there. When I was reading this, so there's this mailbox with a lot of teeth. It was attacking people, and Spider-Man has to take him down. I read that, and I was a little confused because I didn't know what was going to happen in the book. And I was like, is this Venom? Is Venom a mailbox now? What is happening?
I thought it was a mailbox situation.
But it also, there is a classic thing in the Inferno crossover, the X-Men Inferno crossover, where there is a mailbox who eats people. And that stuck with me from reading that crossover for years. And I was like, this is weird because it's like the Venom thing, but it's the Inferno thing. What is happening? Is it the same mailbox? And ultimately, spoiler, but the reveal is Dark Web is going to be Ben Reilly, who is now a villain, teaming up with the Goblin Queen, who was a key character in the Inferno crossover. I don't know how that's going to play out, but as a fan of Inferno, I'm curious to see it happen, is how I'd put it.
Yeah. I agree. I love that you did such a deep dive on Marvel Mailbox continuity there.
I check out marvelmailboxes.com. That's my website, and nobody visits it.
Aww.
Yeah. We should maybe make it a mail thing rather than email.
Oh, like a newsletter?
Like, yeah, a zine.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Zines are hot right now. Let's move on then and talk about Grimm, number one for Boom Studios, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Flaviano. This is a book about a Grim Reaper who's ushering somebody to the other side. Predictably, it goes a little wrong and then goes even more wrong in other ways. What did you think about the kickoff for this new series?
Well, I'll tell you what, this book, at first I was like, okay, this is sort of like a story we've seen before. It vaguely reminded me of, like, your death from the Sandman universe. But then, very quickly, the characters really pop, and we get to see that it's like a very different afterlife world. And the mystery surrounding, well, I guess, our main character is intriguing, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I got to say, I really liked the character design. It kind of almost had like a Beetlejuice meets kind of like a grim kind of fairy tales thing. And
Did you say my name, Meets? Did you call for Meets?
Yeah, I did call for Meets. I'm sorry.
You have to say it three times or he's not allowed to come back to life.
Meetlejuice.
But the art is really fantastic. I thought this was a great first issue, sets up a world, gets you very excited for more. And I'm interested to see how this unfolds and what happens to kind of to our main character, who was very cool with being drunk and driving, which I didn't appreciate.
Fair enough. Suicide Squad, Get Joker, number three from DC Comics, written by Brian Azzarello, art by Alex Maleev. This is the last issue of this book, which is a Black Label book, so it takes place out of continuity. But everybody is going after Joker, including a second Suicide Squad. Our first Suicide Squad is led by Jason Todd, the Red Hood. The second one is even more brutal than the first one, and it's an all-out brawl to see who's going to get the Joker by the end here. I love the art in this book, of course. It's Alex Maleev, absolutely fantastic. But I'll throw this out here right now for a little bit of discussion, potentially. I wish this had a non-ambiguous ending, because feel like
it did have a non-ambiguous ending.
No, an ambiguous ending.
Oh, okay.
He wants,
because I think with Black Label, your opportunity is to tell stories that have never been told, particularly if they are out of continuity. So I understand why they didn't give a definitive ending here, but I found it ultimately a little frustrating, even if overall I really enjoyed this book.
Okay, so wait. You kind of put this out there. Now I'm thinking you're thinking I'm different things. Who do you think shot who?
I mean, my takeaway, if we're going to talk about spoilers for the book here, so if you don't want to know spoilers, turn away for the next couple of minutes from the podcast. I do think ultimately that Jason Todd killed the Joker. That's probably your ending here. But
no, that's what I think.
No, you think the other thing.
Yeah, you saw the Joker had the gun right there on his side.
I think he shot his dick off. What do you think, Justin?
What the fuck?
Oof, a lot of options here. Real JFK style situation we're talking about.
Because JFK shot his dick off, right?
I remember that. He already has been shot
once from the Oliver Stone movie. The second shooter.
He's already shot. He's a little slow. Joker's got the gun right there.
Oh, Joker.
So, yeah, I think Joker got him.
If you think about it, JFK, there's a J at the beginning of Joker.
Stop saying
it. The F is kind of like the E, and then there's an R at the end. So it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's like JK. Mm-hmm. Just fucking kidding is what JFK stands for. Right. I think that Jason Todd shot Joker. I mean, it's a bummer. If it goes the other way, it's a bummer. If it goes that way, then it's sort of like he finally got his revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, but did he? Because we didn't see it on. But first off, I love the ending. I also really thought the art was great. I think it was a great use of the Black Label as far as like pushing things kind of like in a darker kind of than normally, where people are actually dying. So I thought, great use of that. And I liked the Harley Quinn cried. I thought that was a very touching moment. And also great use of a lot of different characters that you don't get to normally see. So I appreciated all the kind of character shots. We got Mad Dog in there, you know, from the Arrow.
Yeah. Overall, really good book. Definitely check it out. Let's move on and talk about Captain America, Symbol of Truth, number one for Marvel, written by Toki Onyebuchi, art by R.B. Silva. In this issue, we're following Sam Wilson, who is Captain America, as he is investigating a new mystery given to him by Misty Knight. They're dating, by the way, and it's very cute.
Well,
she said it wasn't.
It wasn't a date.
Come on. I don't know. I like this book. I thought this was pretty good. What'd you guys think?
I also like this book. The two of them together. I like that date. I hope it grows into something more. Yeah, I definitely love this book. I thought the art was fantastic. It was kind of cool to see Misty Knight. I haven't seen her since Luke Cage series on Netflix. So I miss her. I'm great to see her back. And I hope they team up. If they don't date, at least they get to team up on stuff. But I thought this was a fantastic issue. Great kind of setting things up, moving things forward. And it's some touching stuff there when they reveal like the people hiding there. And then somebody, you know, the guy's like, he knows them, so I thought that was kind of crazy.
I like Sam as Captain America, especially in this book. I feel like the Steve Rogers Cap was like so allergic to relationships, almost of any kind. Like he would just sort of be like, we're dating, but never seemed that way. And to see a Captain America who's like into a partner was really cool and feels like so much more realistic, and all of the touches on Sam here are great. Very excited to get more into this book.
Game Pass or Pass is a podcast that puts the Xbox Game Pass library to the test to see which games you should play and which games you should pass on by. Every game taken directly from the Xbox Game Pass for console or PC gets either a recommendation to check it out, or maybe you should just pass it on by and try something else. But don't pass on Game Pass or Pass, which is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor, CastBox, and Pocket Casts right now.
Did you know there was a Doctor Strange movie in 1978? Or that Tim Burton and Nicolas Cage almost made a Superman movie in the mid-90s? On Superhero Cinephiles, we take you on a journey into the world of superhero films, including the acclaimed, the infamous, and the obscure. And you might just be surprised at some of our takes, because here, we want to talk about the things we love, not the things we hate. Listen to Superhero Cinephiles on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us on the web at superherocinephiles.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at SuperCinemaPod.
Let's move on and talk about Avatar, Adapt or Die, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Karina Becko, art by Benny R. Lobel. Of course, Avatar fever has once again gripped the nation thanks to the blockbuster trailer for Avatar, The Way of Water, which just dropped in theaters, also just dropped online as well. And now we're getting a title where a bunch of avatars are doing avatar things on their avatar world. What'd you think about this comic book?
I don't know. Pete, tell me if this works. Okay. I find the whole avatar situation bananas bad. does that mean what I want it to mean?
Yeah, Pete? It does. Yeah, nice job. Yeah.
Okay, good. So I'm just not, and like watching the trailer, like it's cool to watch. It's like watching someone throw a bunch of candy in the air where you're like, ah, cool, that's cool. But you're not like, I want to watch this for 2 hours. I want to watch this every day. I don't even want to eat the candy, honestly. Let it hit the ground.
First off, there's a lot to unpack there, but let's just try to deal with it one at a time. So you would let candy hit the ground?
What, you catch every piece of candy in the air?
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit on our Moon Knight podcast. In the Jewish religion, a lot of people believe that you shouldn't let a yarmulke, the kippah, the thing that you put on your head, touch the ground. And if it falls, you got to kiss it. Pete feels the same way about candy. Go ahead.
Yeah, you got to kiss that candy.
No, you got to eat the candy. You eat the candy.
The ultimate
catch
kiss.
It before it hits the ground, so that you can
in your
enjoy
mouth. In your mouth, you dive down and you catch it in your mouth.
So here's the thing about this Avatar. Not a fan. So I tried to be open minded with the comic book, and there were kind of moments that were cool, but I really didn't like. The humans in it, so that was tough. I don't know.
My issue with just the Avatar whole universe and the premises of it are they're just we've explored them a lot in a lot more interesting ways in other stories. Like, yes, humans are bad for the environment, but to just do it again and be like, look, these humans destroy this environment. I'm like, I know. We have that as a real problem. Like, tell me a different story. And it's like militaries actually, they lie and are bad for people. It's like, yeah, I know that. Get out of here with this.
On the positive, the art is good in this book. I think they do a good job of capturing the world of Pandora, the avatars.
They do.
The characters.
And I'm mostly criticizing the avatar essential premise. This book, I think, you know, it does a good job of setting the table and getting us into the world, a world that is sort of not easy to access because it is like all the characters look very similar and sort of act similar, and you don't know who is actually who from what their motivations are perspective. It's just like when at the end the kids start getting sick, I'm like, okay, I have a pretty solid understanding where I think this is going. I would want to see a new type of story told in this Avatar universe.
I agree with that. Let's move on then and talk about Seven Secrets, number 17 from Boom Studios, written by Tom Taylor, art by Danielle DiNicolo. This is the second to last issue ever of Seven Secrets. We're finally finding out what's happening with the secrets. There's some big battles going on. There's a lot of fairies in this book, more fairies than I expected from issue number one. But Pete, you seem psyched about this. Talk about this book.
Well, I'm not psyched about the ending, I tell you that. I'm very happy with this issue. This was a great issue. We found out a ton of stuff and a lot about kind of the main couple that we've been following and dealing with their child and stuff like that. Big reveal here. I think they're making really smart moves with this book. I'm really appreciating all the stuff that's going on. I can't wait to see what's going to happen moving forward. I feel like they did such a great job of like setting up this interesting world and kind of meticulously paying off on the different characters as it goes along. I feel like they're building towards what I hope is going to be a great ending.
This book does this thing that, like, I don't know how it happens, but it reminds me of like an anime show that I would have watched when I was a kid, where I was like, I don't quite know all the details of this. I feel like it's been running for 15 years in Japan that's just running here in the U.S. Big world, fleshed out, characters doing stuff, and it's going to run for the rest of my life. So, and I mean that all as a compliment. Like, this world is feels so big. I can't believe it's ending next issue. I feel like maybe we could kick off into something else after this. But it feels like a very lived-in big world.
I agree with that one, too. Moving on to Naomi, Season 2, Number 3 from DC Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis and David F. Walker, art by Jamal Campbell. Now, if you haven't listened to it, we had a great interview a couple of weeks back on the live show with David F. Walker, where he's talking about Naomi, among many, many other things. So definitely go check that one out. But in this issue, Naomi is teaming up with Cyborg and exploring the mystery of what happened to her missing friend. What'd you guys think about this issue?
I thought this was a really cool last page. I really love the art. I'm enjoying the fact that we're finally kind of digging into this character. I thought that Cyborg was great in this issue. I also really love his look in this issue. I thought this was a really cool choice for Cyborg. And then, I'm just like, I feel like Naomi was kind of put upon us, and now I'm kind of like starting to be like, oh, this is cool. I'm enjoying this finally.
I agree exactly with that. I'm enjoying this finally. The first two issues here in this new series have been great, and it feels like we're sort of past all the stuff where it's like she's a clumsy, naive, big wheel in the Justice League sort of out of nowhere. Now it feels like we're getting into sort of the interpersonal relationships here, and it's Bendis back at some of his sort of better story areas where he's like with the Hawk Girl in here. I thought that was a fun exchange, and her being sort of awkwardly showing up and talking to Naomi's parents, and then the mystery that's growing around them, around her, with her friend from Thanagar trying to help her out.
Moon Knight, Black, White, and Blood, number one from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, Mark Guggenheim, and Murray Iodell.
The Googs,
art by Chris Bocciolo, Jorge Fornes, and Dotun Akande. This is another of Marvel's anthologies that only uses black, white, and red to color the book. And as you can tell from the title, it is three stories about Moon Knight. Pete, you're a big Moon Knight fan. What'd you think about this issue?
Well, first off, the Botch is my guy. I mean,
love the Botch.
Dude, if you put Botch on something, I'm there. And I'm going to love it. And this was no exception. I mean, the art's bananas. Just bananas good. I mean, bananas come good. On.
He's doing a Frankencastle book next month that I'm curious to hear if you're going to go for.
Go fuck yourself. He is not.
Go for it. You'll love it.
But yeah, we got to get it's a bunch of stories here, but they're connected, which is enjoyable, and some really great character designs, especially in the Spider-Man stuff, similar to the TV show where you kind of get a big bad guy fight in there, and man, nothing like ending it with a little fun Deadpool cameo. I mean, that was just a fun little thing at the end of that. But yeah, I thought overall three great stories, really amazing teams that they put together on this, and they let them shine. And I think this kind of whole black, white, and red thing is a cool idea, and I'm glad they're keeping it going.
Yeah, and Moon Knight, I was surprised to see this as a book. Moon Knight doesn't usually get this treatment. Makes sense with the show just coming out and wrapping up. Really like the Hickman-Bochlo stuff. Like, how often does Hickman contribute to something like this? So that was really cool. And then really like the last, I mean, like all the stories, but the last one really I responded to, the art in that by Jorge Fornes was
just dope. Really. More like four me's. I loved it.
Yes. More like four me's.
Mm. Yep. Jenny Zero, Volume 2, Homeland Insecurities, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Dave Dwanch and Brockton McKinney, art by Magenta King. Now, we checked out the first issue of this book, of the first volume, and I think enjoyed it quite a bit. It is about a woman who could change into a kaiju and fight other kaijus. Here she's being taken to, I believe, Japan and still fighting kaijus, but mostly eating burgers and bonding with some old friends. What'd you think about this first issue here?
Well, first off, I love her love of burgers. You know, it's very understandable. You would go through those kinds of lengths to get a quality burger.
Yeah,
you get it. Yeah, I think this is a great kind of like setup of a badass character who can't be tied down. You know, she's going to fight her way to her burger joint. And if she's got to, like, you know, sign up to do some shady stuff to get some burgers, maybe she's willing to do so as long as her cool friend's going to be there. I think they do a great job of setting up this character, giving you an idea what this character is all about, and getting you excited for more adventures with this character. Well done, Bananas Art.
The end. Mic drop. Great.
Oh, you're done. Okay. Justin?
I like this issue as well. I think she's got, Jenny Zero, she's got a lot of attitude.
Yeah.
And, she gets to be a badass for sort of the front half of the book and then reconnect with some folks she hasn't seen in a while. I don't know too much about the mystery that's sort of humming underneath her story and where we're headed by the end, but it's a fun enough story that I'm curious to see what happens.
Crossover number 13 from Image Comics, written by Donnie Cates. Once again, Donnie does it. Art by Jeff Shaw.
Hashtag Donnie does it.
Donnie, or does he? I guess does we'll he find out. It? This is does the Donnie end of a big it? Arc here. That has brought Donnie Cates into the story of a bunch of comic book characters that have crossed over into the quote-unquote real world. Finishes that up with a big twist at the end here. But what did you guys think? I'll throw out first, just to start. I think he did exactly what he needed to do here, because the thing weighing over the series was, of course, Donnie Cates is behind it. He's the writer of the book. And they gave us a good, solid twist without getting into it, without getting into spoilers. Yeah. I think it executed really well. It executed emotionally. It's Donnie putting his heart on the page here in terms of his real life experiences.
Almost literally.
And I liked it. I liked it a bunch.
Yeah, I don't always love meta stuff in comics. This series, however, has gone so far through the looking glass of meta that even an artist putting themselves in the book, another thing that, or a writer putting themselves in the book, another thing I find annoying, it works here. And the monologue that he's giving, sort of criticizing the book while also existing within the book, is fun. And there's a line, is like, got some fun cameos throughout, I thought was true, because he did, like, he's being meta and sort of lightly criticizing a book that actually did a lot of amazing things here. So it's cool, and the art's great. I'm curious to see where we go in this next issue.
Yeah, I think this is really a lot of fun, impressively done, great use of Negan. I just think that, like, it was it took some real, has some, the, some of the panels are some real oh shit moments. So impressive. The swings being taken, art's really good. So I was really impressed with this package.
The Sandman Universe Nightmare Country number 2 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Lisandro Estarán and Andrea Sorrentino. In this issue, the Corinthian is continuing to try to explore the mystery of who this weird, nightmarish tongue eye creature is, when he's just a mouth eye creature, just a regular.
Yeah, he's like, he's on mouth patrol. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, I do this.
Is that why, like, Paw Patrol?
Yes.
Yeah,
if you ever watch Paw Patrol, a lot of the puppies there have mouths for eyes. It's very disturbing.
Except for the ones that have other teeth for eyes.
Well, first off, this is amazing art. Like, really amazing art. And I use the word art because it's really impressive what they're doing here.
You're using the word art.
Yeah, yeah. I also just think that, like, the ending was crazy bananas. Like, that was very creative and very creepy. And, like, the nightmare after nightmare scenario that they kind of, like, crawl through in this episode was just, it was a little too much. But, man, what a page turner. I was just really impressed. As someone who's not the hugest Sandman fan, and then scared of the title.
They're called Sandlers.
Yeah, I was a little trepidatious.
The Adam Sandlers.
Fandlers.
It's the Adam Sandlers. Yes.
But yeah, it was really good package.
Oh, I love that Neil Gaiman.
It's good.
Thank you.
I love that we're slowly closing in on a time when Pete only says the word bananas in different ways. And it's up to us to translate for him.
That'll be $1.25 pop.
What was that from?
A deep cut Adam Sandler quote, speak in the language here.
Yep. I was going to go for the da-na-na minion thing and...
Yeah, I know. You're always trying to squeeze the minions into this conversation. And I don't quite understand who you're aiming at with your minions. I've never seen any minions content, and I have children.
The Grootles, fans of the minions. We call ourselves Grootles.
Cool. I mean, I would say we should just cut this out, but now I honestly don't know what to talk about now that you're, I would much rather you confess to committing a murder than I just said, honestly.
Well, as a Sandman fan, what did you think of this?
I like this a lot. I love Corinthians. I love the Corinthian end. I love the Corinthians Bibles.
Yeah, I was going to say, huge fan of the Corinthians.
A lot of great stuff in there. Yeah, haven't read the rest of the books. Yeah. Corinthians rocks. Yeah. Fucking slays.
I haven't read the whole Bible, but man, Corinthians is my
jam. I'm just jumping around to the sort of the cool parts of the Bible.
Joseph can suck it, but man, Corinthians is where it's at.
No, in Corinthians, people are like, Joseph gets sucked. That's all they talk about. They say it all the time. I did a cursory read. I love the Corinthian as a character, and to have him be sort of the central part of the central mystery here, tracking down Tongue Eyes is going to be fun.
Yeah, and I like how they talked about it, and he was just kind of really over it. He's like, I can just see. All right, I can just see. Out of teeth.
It's fun.
Don't even
a lot of great dialogue. I mean, it's James Tynan. Like, you know, he's going to bring that.
Oh yeah,
that great writing heat here. And just to close the loop on Mouth Patrol P is when a bunch of candy gets thrown in the air and you have to kiss it into your mouth.
I could do it.
Shang-Chi, number 12 from Marvel, written by Gene Luen Yang, art by Marcus Toh. This is wrapping up a big arc here for Shang-Chi and then kicking it into the next title as we have introduced the Ten Rings into the Marvel Universe. A very expected but nicely executed thing, yeah. I think. Well, hey,
remember the movie? It was so popular, it did so well. Guess what? Yeah, now it's a part of it.
But, Gene Luen Yang knows what he's doing when he's writing a story, and he makes it work here. And I enjoyed this quite a bit. What about you guys?
I also really enjoyed the dragon reindeer.
Yeah, I know. That was fun. I agree with you, Alex. I think this, the way this is sort of almost like a movie novelization brought into the Marvel Universe, I thought was a well-executed version of that. And I'm looking forward to telling a story that we sort of don't know as much about for Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
But I also just think that this was a necessary kind of move to make, for the comics to kind of like... talk about the Ten Rings and kind of have Shang-Chi kind of controlling them and kind of also being really cool with it. You know what I mean? It's like, well, hey, all I need is four. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus, like wearing a ring on your forearm is hard.
I got to be honest, they're bracelets. I don't want to get into this too much because I feel like got real angry at me when I said that during the movie, but those are not rings. Those are bracelets.
Oh, my
man.
God.
Oh, you were shouting that during the movie?
I was screaming it. I was like, one of those Dumbledore dies people, but.
Yeah. That was you?
You sheep?
It's an armlet.
Bracelets.
It's an armlet or a bracelet at best.
I don't know if you felt it, but I threw a soda at you and it just missed. I was like so close.
Yeah, I turned my mouth and I slurped it up. Tales from Harrow County, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Emily Schnall. In this issue, a waitress is trying to hide out and just stay away from a bunch of weird stuff in her town and keeps finding her anyway. Love the execution of the slow, creeping, terrifying, but weird horror in this book. I thought overall this was really well done. I expected it to be an anthology, but that's not what it was at all, and I appreciated that. What about you guys?
Yeah, especially sort of a slow burn first issue like this. I'm happy that we're going to get to sort of – be here for a little while. I really like the art here. The tone that that Cullen Bunn is establishing with the writing has really paid off with the art, I feel like.
Yeah, I really think the art's really kind of cool. They kind of like
bananas. I could feel
Yeah, yeah, but I really
bananas
thought
cool.
It was the kind of creepy New York that was kind of created there in the beginning. I also really like the move of being like, here's this story about these two people in an alleyway. Then we're going to cut back to the diner, and then we're going to go back to that story. I thought it was so smart, and I like how it trusted the reader to remember what was going on with that. So, yeah, I appreciated those moves, and I liked how like we're kind of getting a longer kind of story here. So yeah, I think it's cool.
Pete, real quick, before while we have a second before we get to our next comic, would you review this banana?
Yes.
How would you review this banana right here?
It's a little smaller than your average banana and also invisible, but I'm sure it's delicious.
I don't even know how to respond to that. Superman, Son of Kal-El, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Cian Torby. In this issue, John is dealing with the revelation from the end of the last issue where Batman told him, hey, your boyfriend's a bad guy.
Yeah. Batman's talking shit.
Batman is talking shit. And Batman gets called on his shit this issue.
I love
Pete,
it.
You raised your hand there. What's going on?
I love this comic. The art is unbelievable. It was just such a cool depiction of these characters, such small moments, but having such huge, the fact that, you know, Batman got put in his place by Superman's dad was just
Paul Kent's like, what the fuck did you just say?
Yeah, well, hey, yo, Batman, you better back the fuck up. Also, Batman, real quick, let's look at your history. What? You're going to take shit? You were dating Catwoman and a murdering psycho? Okay, cool, 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 cool. I can see why you would want to give people advice. Why don't you sit the fuck down and let this guy live his fucking life?
That Paul Kent's like, yeah, I talked to Alfred a lot. Oh, you don't know? I talk to Alfred? Yeah, I talk to Alfred all the time. Miss the guy. And Batman's like, I don't even talk to Alfred. He just brings me soups.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I thought it was such a cool moment. I feel like this is breathing a fresh air into these characters. It's really giving, like, having things feel new again. I mean, just kind of, it makes Batman feel different. It makes Superman feel different. It's just, I'm really...
Makes you feel different.
Yeah, it's just making smart choices with the character. I really appreciate the points that they're trying to make here. It's very, very impressive what's happening. And I loved how Paul Kent was rolling deep for his son. It was just beautiful.
All of the relationships here are great. The one additional one that I'll give a shout out is the exchange with Nightwing, where Superman says, hey, do you mind if I come and help you with those ninjas? And Nightwing's like, I do not feel proprietary about these ninjas. Come and help me. It's okay.
Yeah. Also, there's a fire.
Great stuff. Such a great issue. This book is so good. Moving on.
One of the best comics on the stands right now.
Fantastic.
But also, you're not reading this.
We were talking about, I don't know if it was on the live show or whatever, but like dealing with relationships and family. And this is a great example of that. And like Superman going to his friend first for kind of advice to kind of talk things out and really get, I just thought it was just so well done.
Nocterra, number 10 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Tony S. Daniel. In this issue, we are continuing to put pedal to the metal per the title as the group is finding out more about how to potentially bring light back to the world. Things go horribly wrong in this issue, but they also make some move forward as well in terms of the overall plot. How are you feeling about this so far?
Yeah, you want to talk about some crazy moves. I feel like I'm a broken record, but every time I'm like, okay, cool, I understand where it's going on. We're just going to sit with this idea for a little bit. It fast forwards to the next thing. It's really impressive how quickly this is moving, how much this continues to change, what characters they're focusing on. This is a great example of comic book storytelling in an impressive fashion. the characters, the art, this is just really a ton of fun, increasingly exploring the world that they set up, and a villain who not only changes sides, but also kind of like really helps tell the story is very impressive.
You got competing Williams trying to inherit the name Bill.
Yeah.
Which, you know, all Williams out there are chasing that. Right now, Billy Shakespeare obviously has it. In my normal life, I put the pedal near the metal, above the metal, halfway toward the metal. Never do I put it to the metal. So it's too fast. So I appreciate it here in this book that we're going all the way. And I do think this book does go hard all the time. Stuff's always happening.
Yeah.
Last, we are going to talk about, as mentioned earlier, this is a request from Jolene on iTunes, Catwoman, yes, the Cat File from DC Comics, written by Chuck Dixon, art by Jim Belent. This is originally printed in issues, I believe, 15 through 18 in the 1993 version of Catwoman, or at least it was released in 1993. It's a arc that finds Catwoman going on a James Bond-esque adventure as a guy first spars with her and then eventually, spoiler, wants to marry her. Now, I feel like we should put this out here up front before we even get into the book proper.
Yes.
One thing we mentioned on a earlier podcast when we teed this up is, gosh, whatever happened to Chuck Dixon? He was really an important part of 90s comics. The thing that happened to him is reportedly he became a QAnon supporter and a comic skater, among other things, has become involved in some absolutely horrible trash stuff.
Literally making a QAnon comic.
Yes.
Which is not good.
Awful. So I'm going to just go out and say, and this is no reflection of the request from Jolene, I want to be very clear about that up front, nobody should buy this comic book. It's out of print anyway, but don't support this. It is a bummer of a thing, because obviously there's other people that worked on it. I haven't looked into necessarily like Jim Belent's background or anything like that. Clearly people put this out. They put, you know, presumably their heart into it. But Chuck Dixon, in my opinion, is not somebody you should be supporting in any way whatsoever. That said, do we want to talk about this book at all, since we did actually read it regardless?
Well, it was interesting that we kind of got in the Batman movie, we got to see the kind of like the escape that Catwoman used was what they used in the movie. So I thought that was interesting. We kind of got to see that origin story there. So yeah, that was interesting.
Beautifully drawn panels here of that.
I got to be honest, not to be like a total negative Nelly here. And granted, a lot of the experience reading this was like, oh, if I read this back in the 90s, I would be like, this is so cool. But now the whole idea, and I know this is comics in general, but the whole idea of like Catwoman basically being a naked person who they edited out the nipples and then colored her purple. Very weird. Nah. I don't need to read comic books like that anymore, to be honest.
Well, that was definitely most comics back in, back in the day. So, like, I wouldn't say that this comic is specifically doing that more than other
Absolutely
comics.
Not. That was 90s comic books. Also, the villain is very, like, he has a thing on his face, and he's much wider than he should be for a human being. So, again, a very, like, 90s thing. So, of the time, I think that all makes sense.
I thought you were going to say, like, a very 90s thing, like Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera, very 90s. That's what I went to see it.
I mean, it's
15
true.
Times in theaters, you know, couldn't get enough.
Come see it at the beautiful Pantages Theater in lovely Toronto.
How does...
Gloriously restored.
Pantages how does Theater. That chandelier fall so slowly, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll never know.
I don't know what show you saw, but it followed fast.
Alex saw it probably on Broadway because he was a fancy.
So not
lad.
In the original theater.
Pete and I saw a commercial for it playing in Toronto because we grew up in upstate New York and they ran the shit out of that stuff.
It worked. My parents took me to go see it because of that commercial.
In Toronto. At the restored Pantages Theater.
Oh, I went. Oh, yeah.
Wow. And
the chandelier moved quickly when you saw it at the Pantages Theater?
Yeah, it fell all the way almost to the bottom and then stopped. And then kind of like,
several actors were horribly injured in the
process. Oh my God, that's terrifying.
One of them horribly disfigured on his face.
Really,
he had to
looking
wear a mask.
To that, because I hated the musical while I was watching it. And then they end the act with the chandelier coming down. And I knew that was the big thing. And I was like, why is this movie
Masquerade!
So here's the other thing, the choreography on Masquerade, it's all just like stamping down a staircase. Like, come on, man.
Don't you fucking attack that. That was beautiful.
It was a different time.
It's like the 90s comics of choreography.
Yeah, all the actors were just painted with their nipples sticking out.
The other part that I wanted to say that I thought was funny was when Catwoman was waiting to kind of like further her gadgetry to kind of pop the safe, she had a juice box, which I thought was funny.
It was fun.
I did like that.
Yeah. I mean, the iconic cover in issue 18, her in her costume with the wedding dress on.
Yeah.
Definitely one I think was a trading card that I had back when that was a thing. This Catwoman, we talk a lot about how Catwoman has changed her wardrobe has changed so much. This is a very specific age for her costume that we just talked about. But I also think the character's different. Reading this comic now, I was like, this isn't Selina Kyle. This is the Huntress. I was like, this is a Huntress story to me. And I don't know if how that maybe has changed. I like a lot of what the how the character sort of is, what the character's doing. And like I said, some of the art, especially in the first two issues, I thought was real beautiful. Like her, like the angle we're seeing her run down the building was really cool, and all that kind of stuff. It definitely gets bogged down by 90s, like male gaze stuff, I think, over the course of it. But, I did
appreciate the fact that, like, she was like, oh, I'm going to have these giant boots and then I can kind of have my whip right here, you know, and keep it in there. So I thought that was like, oh, cool. Smart.
There you go. Smart stuff coming out of that book. Seriously, though, Jolene, thank you for the recommendation. If you...
Jolene, you're great.
Yes. Chuck Dixon, you're not great. If you would like to suggest something to us, preferably not a Chuck Dixon book, then you can do so in the comments over on iTunes, as mentioned at the beginning. It can be in a trade, a graphic novel, something.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, whatever.
It can be literally anything, if it's from The Purge or anything like that. If you use... Bone. There is a little bit of a preference if you use like a Minions fan name or something like that as your account name, but no pressure, no pressure. Absolutely.
Really doubling down on this. Yeah. Making it feel too real.
All I'm saying is Minions Rise of Gru is coming out into theaters this summer.
The more you say it, it's giving me shivers all up and down my meats, and I don't appreciate that.
If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast YouTube coming out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
See, Alex is the weird one, is what I'm just saying. I'm normal.
Justin has the meats.
This is Dananazgood.